At the dinner following the 33rd annual Schmemann Lecture at St. Vladimir's Orthodox Seminary, Dr. Charles Agelat, the former chancellor for the Antiochian Archdiocese and the co-founder of International Orthodox Christian Charities, presented his plan for achieving a path to conflict resolution in the Orthodox churches. Earlier in the evening, Dr. Agelat received an honorary doctorate in canon law. Here he is with his January 31st, 2016 proposal.
Reverend clergy, Father John, Father Deacon John, beloved Christy and Big Charles and Luca and brothers and sisters in Christ. You know, God has blessed many things of the clergy and the laity working together here in America. You look at some of the activities which God has allowed me, unworthy though I am, to participate in, like IOCC has distributed over $500 million of aid in over 50 countries. Focus North America, which is just 6 years old, has distributed over $30 million of aid in that short period of time to over 50 cities, people in 50 cities here in the United States. We now have clergy and laity working together in a program that I've started within the Archdiocese that I was telling His Beatitude Miss Grace about, a national evangelism program that is trying to see whether we can make an impact on changing the culture in the churches to have spiritual outreach. And God has blessed it so far. It's been in existence a year. And we have over 65 Antiochian churches running it, and we hope and have been given the blessing by St. Joseph that if other jurisdictions would like to participate in it, we would like that very much. And I asked myself why we haven't been able on the international level to have this kind of concerted joint action. And first of all, I'd like to make clear I'm speaking solely as an individual. Thank God I have no title, I have no official office, so I speak to you only as an individual. But I do so with the experience of having been chancellor of the self-ruled Antiochian Archdiocese for approximately two decades, with a lot of experiences that God provided through that role. And I see three things that I think we need to address in the Orthodox Church, and I'd like to share those with you tonight. The first is we need to look at geopolitics as well as history. Now, that might sound strange. There's a man named Nicholas Kazarian who wrote an article last week, actually, in the Martin Marty Advanced Institute of Religion at the University of Chicago. And he comes out very clearly and he says, Orthodox Christianity is a geopolitical reality. And he talks about the tension between Constantinople and Moscow in that regard. But it's more than just those two. It is a geopolitical reality. And if we don't take account of that, we cannot help our hierarchs create a structure that will work for the Orthodox Church, work in a very effective way, work in the way in which it worked among the laity and the clergy working together in things like IOCC. The second issue that seems to me to not work in the Orthodox Church internationally in terms of governance is we don't have a neutral resolution of disputes. I know that we have the Ecumenical Patriarch as the center of that, but I'll give you some examples where, you know, I think we need to beef that up. We need to figure out a way of resolving disputes. The third, and again, I quote Kazarian there so that I don't have to say it. He says the most important issue among the churches internationally is that of the so-called diaspora. And I'll probably say less about that because I've been talking about that for over maybe 30 or 40 years and haven't made quite the progress I would like to see. That God hasn't yet blessed it, I should say. The But let me tell you a couple of stories. Politically, civilly, with regard to civil government, 1989 to 1991 were the crucial years in Russia and Eastern Europe. But I think the watershed year for the Russian Orthodox Church was probably 1993, when they adopted their laws on religious freedom. And again, through God's grace in a very unexpected way, I was invited as one of 12 so-called international experts on freedom of religion to go and advise the leaders of parliament regarding what laws they should adopt on religion and state. And I didn't really want to go, and I agreed to go if somebody would give me a meeting with Patriarch Alexei for 2 hours to discuss nothing but the American situation. And to my surprise, they called back and said the Patriarch is really looking forward to meeting you. And here I was in Russia on like 3 days' notice. And I didn't know what I was going to say. I was only comforted by the scriptures that said, I'll give you the words. Lo and behold, he gave me the words through a nominal Jew who was the dean of my former law school, who was also there. And I said, Jesse, I need some legal precedent. Here's the position I want to take. What is the law? And I decided, I forgot to tell you the most important thing. The entire rest of the delegation, except the head of it who invited me, he was a devout Catholic, the rest of the delegation were atheists. And it was quite clear, at least in the head of the delegation's mind, that he was going to lead Russia down a historical path that would be very bad for Russia. And I said, look, I'm a tax lawyer. I'm not a religious freedom expert. It's certainly the quality of the rest of the delegation. He said, you had a very important religious freedom case in the United States Supreme Court. Every major religious body filed briefs on your behalf. And more importantly, you're Orthodox, and Russia's Orthodox. And the rest of the delegation are atheists, except for myself, he said. So I did something kind of bold. I stood up, I was the first speaker before the parliamentary leaders, and I said, look, I'm going to tell you my bias, because there is no one of the speakers who are going to speak to you who are unbiased on this critical question of the relations of civil government, of church and state. And unless you know what that bias is, you can't evaluate it. So I said, I want you to know I believe in the Holy Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, one God. I want you to know I believe the second person of the Trinity became man, as Jesus Christ. I want you to know I believe he died and was resurrected. I want you to know I'm Orthodox. I'm under the ancient Patriarchate of Antioch. I'm not under the Patriarchate of Moscow. And now I'm going to put my religious and personal background behind, but remember my words. Don't listen to anyone else unless you know what their bias is, because you will be led down the wrong path. I said, now I'm going to speak to you as a lawyer. What is the legal precedent? The legal precedent is Nazi Germany. The successor West German government for the millions of Jews that were killed paid, and I gave them some large number that I knew at the time, of reparations to the victims and the families of those people. The legal precedent is the state of California in the United States, where during World War II, we interred a Japanese-American citizen just because they were Japanese. And the successor American government paid reparations to the victims and the families. Now, what is your obligation? And then I told him what Patriarch Alexei had said to me at the end of our meeting when I asked him, is there anything you want me to say to the leaders of parliament tomorrow? He said, you tell them that Khrushchev came on television in 1955 and said, within 20 years, I will show you the last Orthodox priest in this country. So I told him that. And I said, your predecessor governments targeted, were so afraid of the Russian Orthodox Church that they targeted for total extinction. You destroyed as many of the church buildings as you could have. Those you couldn't destroy, you made urinals out of the altar area. You made garbage dumps out of other buildings. You killed more than 10 million martyrs for the faith, your predecessor government. So what is your responsibility legally? And I gave them a huge multi-billion dollar number that they had to pay, I said, in reparations to the Russian Orthodox Church. They started running up to me during the break saying, don't you realize we're a bankrupt government? The only way we get that kind of revenue is to tax the people. The people are all Orthodox. It'd be like taxing the church. I said, now that I have your attention, there are two kinds of religious freedom. There's the religious freedom everyone else is talking about, which is religious freedom from political persecution. What I would recommend to you is you have at least a 5-year moratorium on letting other religious faiths come in. And that was very hard for me because I feel very strongly about evangelism. But I knew it was the right thing at the time. And both the parliamentary leaders and the patriarch got more excited than I had expected. And they passed very, as you all know, very restricted religious freedom laws in 1993, where if you hadn't been in the country for at least, I think it was 15 years, that only included 5 faith traditions, particularly the Orthodox, the Catholics, the Jews, the Muslims, and one other group that I don't
Buddhists.
Remember.
Huh?
Buddhists. Buddhists, was it Buddhists? Yeah. And there were members of the United States Senate who talked to me personally and said, we're not too happy with you going to Russia and what Russia did. But I think here we are now, 23 years later. Is that right? 93 and, it's about right, 23 years later. And Russia has become, the Russian Orthodox Church has become more influential internally, and I dare say externally, both among other Christian faith traditions and among the Orthodox themselves. So one of the geopolitical factors we cannot ignore if we're to devise a structure that works for Orthodoxy, and one that is not simply, with all due respect, and I don't know if that's what occurred in Shambasi last week or not, but it often occurs, not simply a negotiation between Constantinople and Russia, saying there's only one canonical Ukrainian church or whatever. If you're going to develop a long-term structure that's going to work, it's got to take into account both history and the role of the Ecumenical Patriarch and such geopolitical factors as where the Russian Orthodox Church is today. The second, and I am making a specific proposal that I'm sure everyone will ignore, but that's never stopped me before. The second factor, before getting to that proposal, is another story regarding dispute resolution. Of course, lawyers are used to dispute resolution. When I was chancellor, I was asked by the Patriarch of Antioch and Metropolitan Philip to go to Constantinople and see His All Holiness Patriarch Bartholomew in a one-on-one meeting, making a formal appeal on behalf of the Patriarchate of Antioch to help us with the situation where the Patriarchate of Jerusalem had tried to take a couple of our churches, particularly in Northern California, if I remember correctly. And shortly before all of that had occurred, the Patriarchate of Jerusalem had tried to do the same thing to the Ecumenical Patriarch himself in Australia. And his not being able to resolve it with Jerusalem, he called together the other primates of churches headed by ethnic Greeks, namely Alexandria and Greece and Cyprus. I can't remember the dictate. Cyprus and Greece and Albania. And the 5 of them said, as I understand it, you shall leave Australia or we will excommunicate you. And Jerusalem backed down and left. And my patriarch and my metropolitan said, we want you to say the same thing. We want you to do the same thing you did with regard to the churches in Australia. And I did that in this private meeting. And as we somewhat expected, His All Holiness said, Charles, I can't intervene in the internal affairs of Jerusalem. And I said, but your All Holiness, you did it in Australia, and we're asking you to do it here. We're giving you a golden opportunity. We're asking you to be the ecumenical patriarch, and not just, one could say, in that other situation, patriarch of the Greeks. Well, we now have Qatar. I don't know what will happen. I don't know what will happen with the Great Council, Great and Holy Council. Thank God I'm out of most of this governance, although they seem to kind of be trying to drag me back into it. What I do know looking at the broader picture, is we need a dispute resolution mechanism in the Orthodox Church. Is it going to solve all the problems? Will Ukraine go away? Will Moldova go away? Well, you know, I could name many other spots. I don't know. But I know we've got to start if we're to be an effective church in the modern age, and that otherwise we will continue to be a footnote in the annals of modern history. The Church of Jesus Christ we're talking about, folks, it's wrong. And we're all going to have to ask God for it. I shouldn't have said that to Father Tom, God rest his soul, when he was a little opposed to the Orthodox Study Bible because he never forgot it. But we are all going to have to answer to God, anyone who had any possibility of doing something. The third issue is the issue of the diaspora, and I'm really not going to address the so-called diaspora, and I'm really not going to address that other than as an element of the international structure. Because I personally believe that unless you resolve the international structure, you never can resolve the situation here in America. And I think I have good reasons for that, but if you'd like, we could talk about that later. So what is this proposal? Well, we are not the first body of any sort to discuss these kinds of situations. You have many examples. I haven't really tried to catalog any of them. Two that come to mind are the American colonies had to deal with large populations and small populations. The United Nations Security Council is another example of ways that one could go. But taking the American colonies example, my proposal is, and I just asked Father John, and we'll look forward to his answer, of what, if anything, they decided in Chambassy on consensus. I think the goal must always remain 100% conciliarity. But I'm a realist, and I think we're going to have to lower that percentage to get what is the title of this talk and my motto in it all, which is ownership of all and control by none. Ownership of all and control by none. To do that, I have recommended that there be two international synods which to pass any legislation in the areas they agree on, and they may need to make exceptions. Nobody's going to want to give up their autonomy immediately or right or as to everything. But would require 80% of each body and 80% of the executive. There'd be three areas, which there are in any kind of governance: legislative, executive, judicial. I believe that you ought to have 15 jurisdictions, quote, jurisdictions, close quote. Well, you know, that just reminded me, there were two quotes I wanted to use in books I bought today. The first one is from Father John, and he says, "Nonetheless, in order to facilitate a reconciliation of primacy and collegiality, what is necessary is no less than a sense of radical truthfulness and fearlessness in order to explore the privileges and drawbacks of each." And I can't concur more, Father John. I would add to that and to consider geopolitics and dispute resolution. But you're right on, and you've done something very valuable for the church here, and we all await volume two. But my own view is you can't do it just with history, so that it's a little different. Let's see what the second quote was. This is from Paul Meindorf's edited, are you the editor, Paul, of the Quarterly? This is Anton Arjakovsky.
Arjakovsky,
I can't read my writing. He says, gradually we will become aware that being Orthodox means more than simply being faithful in an inflexible way to those traditions of the past. He's talking about the diaspora. But we have to have creative solutions. Thank God that Father Deacon John is doing the thinking, and I think we're all very excited to hear his wise words tonight inside. But I think that of those, the reason I say 15 jurisdictions is I really believe, and not because I'm an American, that the 15th jurisdiction has to be America. So how do you deal with the OCA and the non-OCA jurisdictions? My proposal is you give 5 representatives to each patriarchate, treating the OCA as a patriarchate, but that they have 2 votes. Under the second body, call it a Synod of the Faithful, for want of a better term, you would have it be based on population and history and other factors, but you would have limits. Constantinople is never going to accept something that where Moscow may have under its influence 80% of the faithful Orthodox, nor should they. And how do you reconcile that with being first among equals? So my proposal says that neither those churches allied with Constantinople nor those churches allied with Russia should have more than 30% of the vote in the second body, which means 40% would be divided between Antioch and Serbia and Bulgaria. The toughest part, of course, and with trepidation I come here before you to suggest it, but as I say, I guess all you could do is excommunicate me.
Which would be the doctorate.
Which would be really difficult. Oh, you could revoke the doctorate. is what do you do about the executive? What do you do about the presidency? The recommendation that I make in the proposal, and understand, the proposal is simply an example. It's to stir the waters, to get people thinking that, hey, we can solve these problems. If America can do what it did with IOCC, 500 million, and not just that the numbers are important, but the millions of people who have been helped and so forth, and Focus can do it, and the evangelism program can do it, we can do 10 times more if we can just figure out how to work together. So the proposal is that there be an executive committee of 3 internationally, presided over by the Ecumenical Patriarch. The other 2, for various reasons that I could articulate, but I don't want to bore you for too long, and we need to be thinking about going at some point, would be Russia and Antioch. Antioch, where they were first called Christians, but also as a balancing factor. And I've always seen Antioch and Romania as balancing factors. The executive committee would have certain prescribed things. They would have to speak unanimously, the 3 of them, in international forums. They'd have to all be physically present. What you have to do is accommodate the needs of Constantinople, you need to accommodate the needs of Russia, and you need to be reasonable. And I think if you play around with this thing as an example, it's possible. I really do. I've seen much more difficult things get accomplished both in the law and in the church. I mean, look, people thought ILCC would never work. What you probably don't know is that it became completely bankrupt. It had millions of dollars of debt in excess of its assets. And I wish she were here, but if it weren't for my wife, we wouldn't have an ILCC today. And we certainly don't. So these things are possible. With regard to the diaspora, I recommend in this proposal, and I have a copy for anyone who wants one, and if you really want one and didn't get one, just leave me your email. But my recommendation is that you have a similar structure for America as what I proposed, the legislative bodies and the executive body. And I haven't mentioned the judicial body. I think that executive committee should be the judicial body, again, under the presidency of the Ecumenical Patriarch with Russia and Antioch. However, you're going to have to adjust in the rules and make nuances for where one of those bodies is involved. You're not going to want them voting as a judge on behalf of one of their affiliates, or, for example, in the case of Antioch, on Qatar. So I think the time for Orthodoxy is now. God willing, the Great Council will go forward. But if it does, it needs to go forward in an even more meaningful way than the subjects they're talking about. Whether it's done now, and there's no reason the rules can't be modified. I know the Shah Masih procedure, I was at the first pre-conciliar conference, if I remember right. If you had at least four of the major patriarchates, say Constantinople, Russia, Antioch, and Romania, if they all agreed that they could come up with a solution and the rules could be modified. I just want to make clear that anyone who says, well, we can't even think about that kind of thing because the process won't allow it, is really simply wanting to delay the decision, or they can't make the hard decisions to find a way to bring come together. So my prayer and hope for the Orthodox Church, before I died, and I was pronounced dead twice about 15 years ago, one of the many times that God intervened to remind me, anyone who's interested, to tell you about the time I had a bomb on my plane, and through my naivete, the bomb was removed because I got into a big fight with the guy behind the airline counter. And the next guy up, who the bomb was designed to kill, and the headline said 106 people narrowly escaped death. I'm telling you the story anyway. The guy said, you're going to pay for your excess baggage. And the guy got so mad at the guy, and he said, the hell with you and your airplane, pardon the French. I'm not going on your plane. Well, the bomb was designed to kill that man. It was going to take 106 of us out shortly before Rome. Had I not, through my naivete, not realized that when I had the big fight with him, that I had bribed the guy. He winked at me and said, Mabbe Hamish, and we put all our excess baggage on. I was a young man, 21, 22 years old. I didn't know I had bribed him. It was dumb. But God uses, he protects children and fools. And I'm no longer a child, so I assume I fit in the latter category. But I want to tell you, and Father Chad, Father John, your beatitude, this is a very special institution to me. As Father Chad said, it was during this time period in which I started, I didn't leave the diocesan things, I left Sunday school, teaching Sunday school, and I'm not sure I made the right decision, mind you, to get involved in all of this governance. But as I say, God uses the unworthy and fools, and I've been very blessed to be involved in a lot of things that I'm very grateful for, and I love all of you here at St. Vlad's. I love the school, I want well for it, and thank you again for giving me this honor. It's very humbling.